6. Today I am talking with Florence Otten Davidson in her home. And I'm going to ask you your full name.
I have a middle name, Winifred, Florence Winifred Sims Otten Davidson.
All right. Great.
But I don't use all of that.
I'd like to ask you, first of all, how you got to LeGrand, when you came to LeGrand, how old you were, and why?
Well, I married Dr. Fred Otten, and his practice was here in LeGrand. So after we were married and went on a honeymoon, then I moved to LeGrand and lived in that home for about 22 years.
Now, how did you meet?
Through my family. And
so did you, was it a family, did you get a blind date, or what was it?
No, it wasn't. My sister had a party.
Which sister now?
My sister Jeanette Baum.
Okay.
Had a party, and I can't remember whether it was a bridge party. It might have been. And he was there. And I met him there. And
do you know about when that was?
Well, let's see. It probably could have been in the early or the late 40s. Probably the late 40s, and we didn't marry until 51.
Okay, and you were living in?
I lived in Pendleton, and I worked for the Kearns Company in Pilot Rock, Oregon.
What was the Kearns Company?
Well, it was, they made coffin shook and molding and furniture. And they also had a sawmill there, and it was called Pilot Rock Sawmill. And so the lumber, of course, was sold to Kearns, and Kearns developed it into furniture and other items.
Mm-hmm. And what was your job there?
Well, I really was an executive secretary, and because the president of the company always gave his dictation to me, and so did the vice president, and so did the manager, and I was kind of a jack of all trades. I was in charge of the inventory, and I was in charge of furniture sales, and I was kind of a jack of all trades.
Mm-hmm. So you came to this party, and you met him. Did you write back and forth? Or
no, and at that time he was married.
Mm-hmm. And what was his full name?
Frederick Ross Otten. Mm-hmm. And he was married at that time. And it wasn't until he was divorced that he sought me out.
Oh. Uh-huh. And then where
was... But is that something that has to go in message?
No, it does not. Uh-huh. When did you move over to LeGrand?
In 51.
Uh-huh. And did you get married in LeGrand?
No, we were married in Pendleton in the Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm.
And honeymooned in Canada, Banff and Lake Louise.
Mm-hmm.
And we came back and lived in LeGrand.
Can you describe what it was like being a doctor's wife at the time that you came to LeGrand?
Well, he had a very fine practice, and he was a popular doctor. And besides being very good, a very fine doctor, and of course he had night calls, and those were the days when he made house calls. A doctor made the house calls.
Mm-hmm.
So he might even have to go clear out into the country And of course, they don't do that now. They say if you're sick enough, you get to the hospital, to the emergency room.
Where did he practice? Where was his office?
It was in the Sacagawea Annex on the second floor.
Could you describe what his office looked like?
Well, he shared the reception room with a woman doctor, and I can't remember her name right now. My computer's not working. And there was sort of a small office space that had windows up on around it, and the receptionist sat behind there in that office, and he had a nurse, and he had rooms, examining rooms, and he had an office for himself, and I think he, and then there was the lab, of course. So it was probably as up to date for those times as it could be.
Do you remember, did he have a specialty, or was he just...
Well, he was a surgeon and a family practice. He delivered babies, but he also did surgery. Of course, things like heart and lungs, he would send to Portland. And that was before Boise, you know, had this wonderful hospital that they have now, or two hospitals that they have now. So, but he did gallbladders, tonsillectomies, appendectomies, hysterectomies, that type of surgery.
So did he work with young and old?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So if, what would you say were the differences between going to the doctor now as opposed to going to the doctor at that time, other than he made house calls? I mean, what do you think is the difference between a doctor at that time and now?
Well, now I go to a very fine doctor here in La Grande, and...
Let's stop it for a second. Sure. Okay, so we were talking about what might be the difference between a doctor at that time and and a doctor now.
I know my husband was very meticulous and always wore a suit and a white shirt and a tie. And he had, if he had to do minor surgery in the office, he put on a white coat, and he certainly didn't have a beard or a mustache, clean shaven, and you don't see that too often with the men doctors today here in our community.
Why do you think he had such a good reputation?
I think he had quite a wonderful personality. I think he had charisma or moxie. and I think he truly cared about his patients. He was a compassionate man.
Well, he certainly did a lot of surgeries that are very specific nowadays.
Yes.
So, but he sounds like he did all kinds of things.
Yes. In fact, he was, when he came to La Grande, he was the first doctor to get his patient up on their feet after an appendectomy, and had him walk around for a little bit. And the other doctors told him he was a very foolish man to do that. But he had done it during his training, and but he was the first one here in La Grande to do that.
Where did he get his training?
At Charity Hospital in New Orleans.
Hmm. And what brought him all the way out to La Grande?
Well, he was born and raised in North Dakota, Grand Forks, North Dakota. And he wanted to go somewhere where there wouldn't be such severe winters. He was hoping to be near water. He was a swimmer, and that helped put himself through college and medical school by being a lifeguard. And the West appealed to him. And he came out, and I know he considered Coeur d'Alene and was really interested in that beautiful lake there. And then he came into this valley and was impressed with the beauty of it, mm-hmm. surrounded by the mountains, and not too far from Wallowa Lake. Mm-hmm. And so he chose La Grande.
Mm-hmm. And so was it unusual to have a practice with a woman doctor?
Well, he didn't practice with the woman doctor. She had her own practice.
Oh, so they just shared the
They
office?
Just shared the reception room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was very unusual at the time for a woman to be
yes.
practicing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even recall... she didn't have a big practice, but not like my husband's.
Mm-hmm. Did she specialize in anything
no,
specific?
No, I don't recall that she did, mm-hmm. and I don't think she did surgery.
Hmm. So did he do surgery at his office, or did he do surgery
Well,
at
minor.
The
he could do minor things, you know.
And then he went to the hospital for that.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. So... Was he one of these kind of people that worked night and day? I mean, was he?
Yes, because he was on call at night.
Oh, every night?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Whatever, if his patient called him at night, he would go out to their home. Mm-hmm. But he was a man that always took a nap after lunch. He came home for lunch, and after lunch he would go in, and maybe it would be 20 minutes, and maybe it would be an hour. But he would always take a nap and then go back to the office.
What was, can you describe La Grande when you first moved here from Pendleton?
Well, they didn't have very nice restaurants. They were terrible. I felt that they were friendly people. I immediately became involved with the Presbyterian Church and made friends there, and then started the family.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk for a minute about the Presbyterian Church at that time?
Sure.
Who was the minister?
Well, it was Reverend Lewis Sampson, and his wife's name was Jean, and she was a lovely lady, and he was a very fine minister.
Mm-hmm. Was it a big congregation?
You know, I have no idea what the number was. But I thought that it was well attended mm-hmm. at the time.
What made you choose the Presbyterian Church since you come
well,
from Methodist?
Well, I was raised in the Methodist Episcopal Church when we lived in Bedford. Mm-hmm. And my husband was raised in the Baptist Church. And he did not want to belong to the Baptist. So he said, why don't we go to the Presbyterian Church? Because Louis and Jean are my patients.
Oh.
And he liked Louis as a person, and he felt that he would be a good spiritual leader.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that you got involved in clubs and organizations in Le Grand when you got here.
Yes,
Can you tell me some of those clubs?
Yes, well, I became, it was 3 years after I had been here, they asked me to join PEO, which is a philanthropic educational organization, and it's for the benefit of education for women, and it was started back in 1862, and it is a national organization for women. I don't know whether you know about it or not.
Oh, I
don't. And we give scholarships. I'm still a member of PEO. In fact, I've been a member now for 54 years, 55 years now, for women, 51 years. Mm-hmm. And
where would they meet?
In homes, and I belong to Chapter I, and there was another chapter called CO, and it is still going, as well as I. And then a group of us in I left and formed a new chapter called DK. And so we have a tri-chapter scholarship for students going to the university here in town.
Oh. Well, so when you first got there, who was in the chapter with you?
Well, when I joined I, there were a lot of elderly women. And I was one of three young women in the group. They had let themselves become too picky in choosing their members. Mm-hmm. And some of them, one was Edna Broughton, who at one time was state president of PEO. And she had a son that was Judge Broughton here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And Judge Broughton was married to Gerda Broughton, who is, maybe one of you have interviewed her.
Uh-huh.
And but anyway, Judge Broughton's mother belonged to Chapter I, and Gerda was in I too. But she and a group left and formed CO.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, why did people leave and form different groups?
Well, one of the reasons I became, they started blackballing people. When a name was submitted for membership, they would vote on it, and they would blackball.
For what reason?
No reason was given. But they had their own reasons. And so they were stagnant, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I happened to make it through.
So how would that be done? Would it be by vote?
Yes. There's a little box, and they have little white marbles, and they have little black marbles. And there's a black ball is against them. The white is for them.
And they would actually do that.
Yeah.
So these people left because they didn't like that practice, or what?
I wonder if I should have told you that. We better not talk about the voting.
Okay. All right. Well, so how would you choose the women to to get the scholarships?
They apply. Because we go through the high school, for one thing.
Oh, okay.
And then on references, people will let us know, or we as members of PEO become acquainted with people that want to return to college. We have a wonderful scholarship for women that maybe had a year or two of college, quit, married, raised a family, and wanted to return.
Mm-hmm.
And
that the case when you first came in earlier on?
Right.
Yes. There women that wanted to go back to college?
Yes. Uh-huh. In fact, I noticed it a little later on, maybe not right when I joined PEO. I wasn't aware of that happening. But we even have international scholarships for women. It involves thousands of dollars, of course, with them. They're usually women that want to get a doctorate, and we do it with the idea that they must return to their own country further the education of the people in their own country.
And how would you raise money for these scholarships?
Now, this is a national thing, a national scholarship, when I mentioned the international. We pay, our chapter pays, so much of our dues goes to national.
Oh, I see. And then from the national comes the scholarship money?
Yes.
Oh, I see. So it comes
and then also endowments or foundations. They've set up a system now of foundations, and so our chapter, GK, has a foundation that we contribute to, maybe in memory of a member that has passed away, instead of sending flowers to the service or the family, we give donations to the foundation.
So has it always been a female student?
Yes, always. Uh-huh. We've only had one boy apply for the scholarship, and we considered it. But his background was in his GPA and SAT tests. Everything were not as good as one of the girls that we chose.
And do they write you an essay as well as having their transcript?
Well, they fill out an application, and they do give a short essay of what they want to do, what their goals are.
Mm-hmm. So did you make a lot of friends when you first came through that organization?
Yes, I did. They were mostly elderly women. Mm-hmm. There was only, three of us that were... I would have been in my early 30s.
Mm-hmm. What other organizations do you belong to when you first came?
Well, I was a member of the church. I was a member of the country club.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk about the country club in the 30s? That must have been a very interesting
time. Well, it wasn't the 30s. It was the 50s.
Oh, it was the 50s? 50. Oh, so it didn't come in until the 50s.
Well, no,
well,
I didn't.
You didn't get here
didn't
until the 50s.
Until 51.
That's right. So what was it like then?
Just like it is, I think, today. You have your women that are very easy to get along with, and then you have your negative element.
Mm-hmm.
And
in the early 50s, what was, when you went to the country club, what did you go there to do? What was available for women at the country club?
They always had lunches. They served lovely lunches, and the women themselves prepared the lunches.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. And set the table and decorated the table and
so
of course.
So there weren't people to prepare the lunch. You had to do it yourself.
No, not then. Mm-hmm. We all took turns preparing the lunches, and we played golf, and some played 9 holes, some played 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the women my age. I didn't think they were complainers.
Mm-hmm.
That some of the older women were rather bossy. And
were there days that women could go to the
Yes, it was Wednesday. It was Wednesday.
Could you go any other time, or was that just...
Well, men's day was Thursday, so you usually didn't go on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. And were there events for both male and female to go to the country club?
Let's see, at the beginning, they didn't... a number of years later, they would have couples night, and it would just be a 9-hole tournament. Mm-hmm. And you'd bring your own steaks and barbecue, and then bring a salad or dessert.
Mm-hmm.
along with the stakes. And so, yes, they did have that later on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember anything. They had dances at the country club, and New Year's Eve parties. And,
mm-hmm. and was it live songs or live music?
Sometimes they did have live music, mm-hmm. and sometimes it was recordings.
So would you go weekly to the country club, or?
Let's see, when I started playing, I didn't when my children were really young.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until they were older and I started playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I would go weekly, go on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. So, you had your children, and when were they born?
The first one was born in 52. The third one was born in 53. Let's see. 52, 53, and then 55, and 56.
Mm-hmm.
They were all within 3.5 years.
Oh,
the eldest was 3.5 when the youngest was born.
Mm-hmm. And did you have the babies at the hospital?
Did I what?
Did you have the babies at the hospital here?
Oh, yes, uh-huh, uh-huh. At St. Joseph.
Mm-hmm. Was your husband in attendance at all, or did
he? He delivered all of them.
He
delivered all four of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That must have been nice to have your husband there, I heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Describe for me, if you would, because we're focusing on the history of the brand, what a young mother might do with her children in Le Grand in the 50s. You've got a lot of small children. Did you have activities with other young mothers? Were you mostly in the home? What was it like?
Well, I think probably the first place was the church, you know, through Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
And I belong to what they called a circle in the church.
What's that?
Well, it was a ladies' organization, and we had monthly meetings, and we would put on lunches. And
mm-hmm.
I know I had several meetings at my house, and they would bring their children, and the children would play in the little playroom that we had.
Where were you living at that time?
Up on the hill where Dr. German and Elaine German live.
What street is that?
Well, it's called Auden Boulevard now.
Oh, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And we own the surrounding land.
Mm-hmm.
There were no houses up there, just ours.
Oh, so you were a ways away.
Well, that wasn't too far away.
Uh-huh.
Terry, this is April Curtis. This is Terry Cross.
Nice to meet you.
Terry helps me out.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. So, what was the name of the circle in the church that you...
I don't recall a name.
Hmm.
Maybe it was Young Women's Circle, or I just don't recall.
Mm-hmm. What are the kind of activities that young mothers engage in the 50s and the 90s? Besides church activities, were there other things that you could do?
Well, it wasn't until kindergarten time we would share carpooling, you know. We would take turns. We'd each take a week, and maybe there'd be five children that we would pick up and take to the kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
We had a swimming pool. So my children all learned to swim early, and we had other children over for them to play with and to swim.
Mm-hmm.
And the mothers would come and help lifeguard, and we never had an accident or even a close call of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were things that we did, and then of course when my children got older, they joined the swimming team.
Mm-hmm.
That was in operation during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, we would. My
husband would take the children fishing occasionally.
Oh, where would he take them fishing?
Well, probably up Crafters Creek, I think, was about the only place they went.
Can you describe what that grade school was like at that time, where they went to school, and what a typical day for that the students would be like at the grade school?
Well, my children went to Central, and they first went to Ackerman Kindergarten, with the exception of the eldest child. I didn't get her in there. She went to another kindergarten, a private one. So they started first grade and went through the grades there of Central.
Now, was Ackerman at that time, was that a law school?
Yes.
How did that differ from what the other kindergartners were going to be? What were they doing there that was unique or different?
Well, they had a very fine teacher by the name of Miss Gossage. And she was a large woman. And we learned how she kept control. She never raised her voice. But if a child was acting up, she would grab them by the shoulder and squeeze real hard. And the child soon came into line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And or she was known to spank, too, also.
In fact, I had a daughter that was... Yes, she did. And I didn't know about it until after she had left LeGrand. Mm-hmm. And my nephew, who happened to be in the same class as my daughter, told his mother and me how Miss Gossage... All he could see was Miss Gossage's hand going up and down and spanking my Chris. So that was how I learned about it. My Chris never told me.
Did they have students working in the classroom at Ackerman?
No, they didn't.
So why was it called a lab school?
I beg your pardon, they had college students, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, indeed. They did. They were like a student teacher.
Mm-hmm. Were the things that they were doing, were they different from the other kindergartners? And
well, it's been so long ago, I don't know that I can compare. I think Miss Gossage was very much ahead of herself and other people.
Mm-hmm.
She was very creative, and she kept the children busy, and of course they had their rest periods.
Were there arts? Did they do?
Yes, art. Yes.
Music and.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what do you remember about Central School?
I felt that they had good teachers there. Until I had one daughter who all of a sudden, she was in the fourth grade, was complaining of a stomach ache and not wanting to go to school. And it was happening more and more and more. And finally, I took her to the doctor. And he said, I find nothing wrong with her. And he said the only other thing we could do would be an upper and lower GI. And he said, I hate to put a child through a thing like that. He said, if I were you, I would go to school and visit her class and see what's going on in that classroom. So I did. And the teacher was a nagger. And she picked on one boy the whole morning I was there. It was terrible. Just terrible. So I knew she had picked on my Chris. And Chris might have been one of her problem children or something. So I moved Chris to Ackerman for the 4th, 5th, and 6th grade. And I put my youngest and my son also over in Ackerman after that.
So you had your choice of where they were to go. So you could decide to send them or not send them.
Yeah. they allowed it.
Do you remember plays or music events or pageants that were put on at Ackerman at the time the kids were there?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think there were plays.
Mm-hmm.
Or pageants.
Mm-hmm.
Nor in the grade school. Mm-hmm. I don't remember a pageant or a play. Mm-hmm. They would do music. They would have little concerts with their singing.
Mm-hmm.
Florence Miller, Eugene's mother-in-law, was, in fact, she felt that she owed we mothers her job because Central did not have music. They didn't have a library. They had no recognized play during recess time or organized play. And so a group of us mothers got together. I think at that time I had two children in Central. And we wrote up a resolution asking for these things for Central. And we went before the board and presented it. And the superintendent was ousted that year.
Hmm.
And we had a new one come in the fall. And he adopted all our resolutions. And we had a library. We had a music teacher. We had supervised play at recess time. They even brought in a reading specialist, and so we owed a lot to that superintendent that realized we really were trying to upgrade our little Central school.
Mm-hmm. So at that time, the children were in school. Now, did your husband continue to work in the same office and do all the same surgeries and that kind of thing?
Up until 62. And he and his father had planted a cherry orchard and a peach orchard. And
where was that?
Right along, our house was on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And as you went up the road, the cherry orchard was on the left and the peach orchard was on the right.
Hmm.
And so he was kind of a farmer at heart and had a beautiful yard. And in fact, he had a landscape architect draw up plans for our house. And he put up rock walls that were beautiful. They're still there today.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, he planted the orchards with the help of his father. And so he, of course, would plow and spray and trim and do everything that an orchardist does.
Mm-hmm.
And he bought a tractor. He had a tractor that had the tracks that would go around like this,
mm-hmm.
Rotate, and the tractor, he turned that in on a new tractor, and it was a three-wheel tractor, and we were on a hillside. And one of his friends, Ken Segrist, who had a big ranch out in the valley, told him that he had the wrong kind of a tractor for the hillside. And I heard this conversation, and my husband said to him, I can always tell when the nose comes up, and I just throw in the clutch,
mm-hmm.
and the nose goes down. Well, one time he didn't, and he was killed by a tractor accident.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened in 62.
So the kids were still small.
They were. They were 6, 7, 8, 9.
Wow. difficult?
Well, your deep regret, of course, is that the children did not have a father.
So did you raise them pretty much on your own?
I did. And they were pretty much out of the nest when I married the second time.
Do you remember events during their high school that made you that memories that you have of things at the high school with the children that you think might be noteworthy in terms of history?
Well, you know, I started teaching in 65, I guess it was.
At the high school?
At the high school, I had a BS from Oregon State. And so I went back to Eastern Oregon College at that time and picked up the education courses that I needed. And received a job of teaching in the high school.
How'd you teach?
Mostly it was accounting and business law. The first year I taught what they called general business and business law.
Describe that.
General business?
Mm-hmm. I mean, what was
it was very elementary, I felt, but it was amazing that the children didn't know things like how to write a check, you know, how to make a deposit. They knew nothing about the stock market. It was rather a basic business course.
Mm-hmm. So by the time they got out of there, they could run a household?
Well, they could certainly budget.
Mm-hmm. Then what did you teach?
Well, after 3 years of teaching, I went back and got a master's at Eastern Oregon College.
What was your master's in?
In education. Hmm. And so then I came back and taught 7 more years, and then that's when I taught accounting and business law.
Mm-hmm. And what was the difference between the basic class and the... And the accounting was that?
Well, accounting was more detailed. It started you from the beginning. And you know, it's a beautiful course. I love teaching it because it builds on itself, you mm-hmm. know. And it's something you never really forget. You might not use it right away, mm-hmm. which is what I told the students. A little review, and it's right back. It's just like swimming. You never forget how to swim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same way with accounting. You might, if you don't use it, you might forget some of the details, but a review, it'll come back.
And what about business law? What was that class?
Well, it's basic. It's very basic. And you talk about torts and liability and
did they have debates and that kind of thing?
We put on trials.
Yeah.
And I took them to trials over at the courthouse. And one time I took them to hear the Supreme Court that was meeting in Pendleton, Oregon.
Oh.
And we got permission to go. And the court accepted our visit. And, of course, we had to sit very quietly. And
do you remember what the trial was about?
Well, they heard several cases, but the most interesting case, and you almost expected this one justice to put his feet up on this sort of a crescent type of a desk that they were sitting behind, and he leaned back in his chair and he said, "I don't see why you're so upset about this." And what it was, that a woman, her ex-husband was killed, and she was terribly upset and deeply grieved for him. And several weeks after the funeral or months, I've forgotten the period of time, she went back to the cemetery and couldn't find his grave and became hysterical and out of control and went all to pieces. And this came out in the trial before the Supreme Court of the state of Oregon.
No.
And this was when the justice said, I don't see why you're getting so excited because you couldn't find his body. And they did find it. It was moved. It had been in the wrong grave. And they moved it, unbeknownst to her. And she was the ex-wife.
So what was it like teaching in the 60s? Didn't the students' behavior change quite a bit?
Yes, I noticed it.
What ways did they change?
More rowdy. Particularly with the boys, not the girls, but the boys. Didn't particularly want to study, and one time Dale Wyatt, the principal, came to me and asked if I would take six boys into my business law class because they had been kicked out of other classes and they were seniors and they needed credit to graduate, and he asked me if I would take them. And they were absolutely terrible. I couldn't get them to settle down. And I approached them in a nice manner, and I couldn't do it. So I went to Dale and told him. And so he said, well, we've given them a chance. We'll just call in their parents and have a talk. And so he did. Six parents, well, the mothers were the ones that came in. And he laid down the law and he said, you tell your son if he acts up in class, then he's out of the class and he doesn't graduate. They all graduated.
How did the war affect? Now, how long did you teach? You were there until when?
I taught from 65, 3 years, and then took a went back for a master's and taught seven more years, and I quit teaching in 76.
Mm-hmm. So you were there during the whole Vietnam situation. What did you notice about students when the war years?
I must say that I noticed nothing.
So were there any protests?
No, none. It was never discussed in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. So did you have your own students, your own children in your classes?
I only had my son in an accounting class 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave him a B+ in his first 9 weeks, and he was very unhappy with me, and I said, but that's the way it worked out. I said, you really didn't do A work, but he got an A for the semester.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to be honest with him about it, and he felt he should have had an A. So.
When did you meet your second husband?
I was introduced by friends.
And when was this that you met?
I met him in May of 76.
Mm-hmm. And what was his full name?
John Raymond Davidson.
Mm-hmm. And what did he do?
Well, he was retired at the time, and he had two businesses. He owned a cattle farm, and he also ran a logging business. He didn't own the trucks. He hired trucks, you know, to hauled the logs, but he had all the big equipment, like the DC-6s and all the chainsaws and all of that, you know, whatever you need for a logging business. Mm-hmm. And 1 year logging would be good, and maybe cattle prices would be down, and so they sort of balanced each other out. And sometimes, if he was lucky, they were both good, and so that was great, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where did you live?
When I married him, mm-hmm. We lived on Gilcrest Drive. You go up 12th Street, and Gilcrest is about two-thirds of the way up the hill on the right-hand side. And you go down a quarter of a mile on the lane. It's at the end of the lane. It overlooks a little 10-acre lake.
Oh.
And we sold that just a year ago, May.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I lived there 28 years.
So, can you talk about the sawmills in Union and Wallowa County? Things that you might remember?
My husband, after he graduated from the University of Idaho, came to La Grande and got a job as bookkeeper with a company called Bowman Hicks that was here in La Grande. And he worked the Depression came along, and they decided to move to Wallowa, and so they dismantled Bowman Hicks Sawmill and Lumber Company here in La Grande, and this was before World War II, so they sold all the steel part of the mill to Snitzer of Portland. I don't know whether you've heard of the name Snitzer.
Oh, the hall.
That beautiful theater.
The Snitzer, yeah.
Yes, uh-huh. Well, it's her husband is the one that has the business now.
Mm-hmm.
They're in steel business, and they shipped a lot of steel to Japan before World War I.
Mm.
And anyway, that's where most of the steel went from the Bowman Hicks Lumber Company.
Ah, uh-huh.
But anyway, they moved up to Wallowa and set up a sawmill. And so that meant that my husband and his first wife moved to Wallowa. And his father-in-law and mother-in-law lived and moved up to Wallowa also. And the father-in-law, I think at that time, was manager of Bowman Hicks up to a certain point, and then Bowman Hicks sold out to Bates, and Bates was run by a man, Mr. Bates, and his five sons.
Hmm.
And eventually my husband became manager of the Bates Lumber Company.
In Wallowa.
In Wallowa.
Uh-huh.
And he was, I don't know how many years he was there as manager. And then he decided to go into the logging business on his own, which he did.
So did he continue managing the Bates
No,
as well?
He left that company.
Mm-hmm.
He left that company. And his father-in-law passed away, and the mother-in-law owned quite a bit of timber, and but she was land poor, you know. She
mm-hmm.
owned land but didn't have income.
Mm-hmm.
And so my husband and his first wife paid her a monthly salary or payment, I should say, monthly payment, and bought the timberland from her.
Now, this was all in Wallowa?
In Wallowa County. And so they acquired timber. And then they even bought, well, she also had a small farm. And Ray and his wife bought the farm from her, paying her monthly payments so that she could live, have money to live on. And have you ever noticed Water Canyon when you go up to Wallowa? Well, that's where they lived. The father-in-law and mother-in-law lived in one of the White Houses, and Ray and his wife lived in the other. And then he sold out everything and moved to LeGrand and built the house up off of 12th Street.
He built it after he moved? And was that in the 40s or 50s?
No, he came down and started building. I think he sold out around 73 up at Wallowa and started building in about 74 and then discovered that his wife, Gilda, had cancer. And so they had to go to Portland and for treatment and radiation. And at that time, they had chemo, but not like they do today, I don't think. And so she only lived in the house, and it was not completed when she lived there. Oh, about 2 weeks. And then she passed away.
So now he had his logging business brought down to LeGrand?
No, he sold out.
He sold his logging business there.
Yeah. He kept one DC-6 for a while because he dug the lake, what we called the lake in front of the house. It used to be called Slaughter's Pond. And do you know Mary Hearing?
Yes.
Her father was Dr. Engel, and he was a chiropractor in town, and a very fine one. And he told me that he used to ice skate on Slaughter's Pond when he was a boy. And if he were alive today, I think he would be maybe 125 or something like that, you know. And so anyway, my husband dug that pond deeper and bigger and made a little island in the center. And the Oregon Fish and Wildlife people came and put a post in the island and with a box on top, and the geese come and lay. A family is created there. And so we had geese on the lake, of course. But anyway, then he sold the DC-6 after he had, he even made part of the road going in.
And what's a DC-6? I don't know what
it's a huge tractor, just huge. It's a big thing. And it was used in his logging business. I think he had several of them.
Did he have trucks, two big trucks?
No, he didn't have the hauling trucks, hauling the
logs.
He hired people to do that. And the men had their own trucks, you know. They owned their own trucks. And they do today, too. I think Boise Cascade just hires them to do the hauling.
I see. So what was the name of his company when you met him?
Probably Davidson Logging. I don't know that I ever heard him speak of a name. But, of course, that would have been in Wallowa County. Hmm.
So when he got to LeGrand, then did he start a new logging company? Or
no.
How did it?
No. He retired.
Oh, he retired once he got to LeGrand.
Yes. Uh-huh. I really don't think this is very historical
for
you.
Oh, I think it's very interesting.
Well, it might be interesting, but it's not historical.
Well, the fact that he had that company there, I think that's really interesting, because Union and Wallowa were the same county, all in the same county.
I want to back up and say something about my first husband.
Great.
At that time that he was practicing medicine, there were two hospitals, St. Joseph and a very rickety old Grand Round Hospital. You know, it was really an old one. It was badly in need of repair and everything, and even to bring it up to standard. And St. Joseph would not allow the doctors to do certain surgeries. In other words, my husband was operating at St. Joseph one time, and the lady had cancer, and it involved the uterus, and the superior would not allow my husband to remove the uterus because she was of childbearing age. And my husband realized that even St. Joseph had reached a point where they needed to do some remodeling and bringing things up to standard.
Mm-hmm.
And so did the Grand Round Hospital, very definitely. And so he went before Hill Burton, which was a federal agency that provided funds for hospitals throughout the United States. And he met with them and asked for donation, you wouldn't call it a donation. I guess, well, maybe you would. Anyway, so that they could build a new hospital here in town, where all kinds of surgery could be done. And at the time, St. Joseph had several sisters there at the Hill Burton, because they were applying for money too.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband got the okay to build, and all they got was $250,000. And it meant that LeGrand had to back.